Our neighbors in Quebec prepare to head to the polls in an election with much at stake. It all started on March 5th when the Premier of Quebec, Pauline Marois, dissolved the National Assembly and called for elections on April 7th. Canada's government is a parliamentary democracy. That's how it works there. Needless to say, it has not been a boring campaign. There has been mudslinging. A millionaire media executive has entered the race. Potential Quebec independence has reemerged as a big issue. And the list goes on. The campaign in Quebec has gone almost uncovered here in the U.S. We'll try to change that. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn more about the political situation next door. What's at stake for the 8 million people of Quebec? Maine Calling looks across the border, 1 week away from Election Day. But first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. A week from today, the people of Quebec head to the polls. Analysts say the race is too close to predict which party will walk away with the most votes. As is often the case in Quebec elections, language and independence are big issues. Today, we're going to learn more about the candidates seeking office and the issues voters are most focused on. In our Bangor studio, Tony Brinkley. He's a professor of English and associate at the Franco-American Center at the University of Maine. Joining us from a studio in Quebec, Louis Baltazar. He is a professor emeritus in the Department of Political Science of the University Laval. We invite you to join our conversation. What do you want to know about the election in Quebec? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And I'm going to start with you, Tony Brinkley, in Bangor. Thanks so much for joining us. Tony, what can you tell us about the Quebec elections?
What can I tell you about the Quebec
elections? Are you following them closely?
I have been following them, yeah. The work I do at the Franco-American Center frequently involves engaging the Quebec government in Quebec. We generally look at things in the long-term perspective. And so in this election, as before, we are looking at the issue of independence. We're looking at the issue of language, as you bring up. We're noticing as the debates go along that those issues tend to track in a way we would expect. And we also expect that the engagement we'll have with Quebec after the election will be approximately the same as it is now.
When you say the engagement, the amount that the people in Franco-Americans in Maine are engaged,
yes,
with what's going on in Quebec.
Yes, the Franco-Americans in Maine and the Franco-American Center at the university, and the way we try to create a bridge between Quebec and Franco-Americans in Maine.
You know, the last time that this was really on the radar screen, it seems to me, was almost a decade ago, 1995, when there was the independence referendum. What has been the independence movement since then? Has it really fallen off of the radar? Is that just because of our perspective here in Maine that it seems that way?
Would you like me to answer that or my colleague?
I need to say that we're working on some technical issues with getting Louis Baltazar on the show. So
it'll
be just the two of us right now, Tony.
Okay. Do I see it as different or the same? It seems to me that if you look at the polls in Quebec right now, to avert a stance towards a referendum on sovereignty tends to work against you, and a sense that no referendum will take place in the near future seems to work for you. Pauline Marois, the Parti Quebec, is very careful not to say that there'll be a referendum anytime soon, I think, and Couillard for the Liberal Party seems to do better if the issue is focusing on sovereignty. On the other hand, the question of language seems to go for Marois rather than Couillard because of some mistakes he made recently. So you see an emphasis on language, but perhaps not so much an emphasis on sovereignty.
All right.
That would be my reading.
We have a call coming in, and I'm going to go to him. John in New Brunswick, Heartland, New Brunswick. Thanks so much for calling into Maine Calling. Go ahead.
Thanks for having me. I listen to you. Listen to you quite often, even though we're up here in Canada land. Can you hear me?
I can. I can. Go ahead. What are your thoughts on the elections in Quebec? Are people in New Brunswick following them more closely than folks here in Maine seem to be?
Well, I might be able to offer a little different perspective. I have friends that are in Montreal, and I found it interesting to know, and they came right out and told me that Madame Marois, they don't want that party back in. That they're looking for the Liberal Party to come in, simply because they don't want this contentious separatist issue.
Mm.
Like the everyday common person on the street was the perspective that I'm trying to get.
And what about the perspective in Eastern Canada? Because a separate Quebec would separate the nation, would it not?
That's exactly right. Well, I can only speak for me when I say this, is that Quebec, unfortunately, it's been so many years that it has been such a contentious issue that it's hard to lend any credence to it at all. You know, I hear on the street around here that it's just Quebec whining again.
Huh.
You know, I hate to tar it with a broad brush like that. Now, having said that, this last trip to Montreal, I learned that the language issue wasn't because they just wanted something to whine about. The man I was speaking with was in his early 50s, and he can remember when he and his wife went on their 25th wedding anniversary. It was the first time in his life that he looked at the taps on the bathroom, and it was French for hot and cold.
Huh. Well, John, thanks so much for calling in with your perspective. And I understand we do have Louis Balthazar with us now. Louis, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you very well. Can you hear me?
Yes, excellent. I'm
good.
So happy to hear from you. Why don't we start at the beginning? Because I think a lot of our listeners maybe don't even understand how this happens in Canadian provinces, how suddenly somebody says, oh, the legislature's dissolved and we're going to have a vote. Why did Pauline Marois dissolve the National Assembly and call for an election on March 5th?
She was ahead of what we call a minority government. That is to say, it's a government without the support of the National Assembly, of the majority of the National Assembly. So it's very hard to have laws in these circumstances. You in the U.S., as a matter of fact, are used to it. Congress is often opposed to the president. But in our system, normally the legislature should get along with the government and pass legislation. So here we had a minority government, so it was difficult for the PQ government to function. And they claimed that they could not pass their agenda, especially a famous charter of laïcité, which is secularism, strong separation of church and state, with which they wanted to ban most religious signs for people working in the public sector. And that was a very controversial law. And the other parties didn't agree with it. So Madame Marois said, in order to pass our legislation, we're going to dissolve the assembly and call another election with the hope of having a majority this time.
And she clearly thought that the PQ, Parti Québécois, would gain more seats in the legislature, but that the polls show that that's probably not going to happen. Is that right?
Well, at the time she called the election, the charter of laïcité, of secularism, was strong enough among the population that there were good indicators that the PQ could get a majority. But this change, the issue of independence came ahead during the campaign, especially the notion that perhaps Madame Marois could call a referendum And that got people scared. And the last polls we had gave the Liberal Party a majority this time.
I understand it has been quite an election, very raucous, a lot of mudslinging, and has changed a bit with the entrance of sort of a celebrity candidate. Can you explain that?
Yeah, that's changed it all. Pierre-Carl Péladeau was for a long time the head of Québécois. Québécois is an extraordinary, powerful company in the media sector in Quebec. It owns a cable company, TV station, many newspapers, and many other components of the media picture. And so Péladeau resigned as head of his company and decided to go in politics and support the independence of Quebec. And he became a candidate for the PQ and let it know to the population that the reason why he was joining the PQ is to bring about the independence. We must remember that the Parti Québécois has been founded in 1968, so a long time ago, having as a number one priority in its platform to bring about eventually the independence of Quebec. As you know, we had two referenda on the issue, and they were both lost, one by a narrow margin, the last one in 1995. But the PQ has been often in the picture without calling independence in the short run. And this time, it was the same. You know, many times, except in 1976 and 1995, the PQ was running to form a government, and every time was not calling in the short term for a referendum. And this was the case in 2012, and this was the case in this election. But again, Madame Marois says that we don't foresee a referendum, but who knows, if ever people want one, there will be one. So she remains a little vague as to the possibility of a referendum, and the other parties are making mileage on that, you know, and accuse her of having secret intentions to call a referendum.
Yes, I've seen that in some of your papers, her hidden agenda, they call it. Yeah, that's right.
And it happens that the majority, a strong majority of the population in Quebec, even those who wish Quebec would be independent someday, do not wish a referendum, 66%. Even the separatists themselves don't want a referendum because they know that if we lose one, it could be terrible.
Tony Brink,
the two times they lost a referendum, it was very bad as consequences for the status of Quebec and the Federation.
Tony Brinkley, when I covered this in 1995, I was covering Franco-Americans in Maine watching the referendum election. And I have to say, most I spoke with were hoping that it would not pass and that Quebec would remain part of Canada. Is that just the people I met, or do you find that to be pretty much the feeling that even though there was very strong emotional support for the PQ, not necessarily for separation from Canada?
Oh, yes, I think that's clearly the point of view. I don't think most Franco-Americans in Maine, at least the people we work with, think about this very much, and if they think about it, I don't think they imagine it to be a very good idea. I think they think of it as a past issue, not a present issue, or perhaps a distant future issue. My understanding is that the PQ really would like it to be seen that way right now in Quebec, too, but because of certain statements and because of what the opponents are saying, they're not able to get out of that sort of blurred position.
Louis Baltazar, I want to ask you about, you know, it's been almost 20 years since that 1995 referendum. And I understand there's been, like there has been all over the world, a lot of immigration, especially from Islamic countries. How much is that a factor in this election?
It is an important factor. As I told you before, Madame Marois put it at the center of her platform, and since she knows that she has popularity with her charter, she will talk a lot about it in this coming week. The problem is that, for good reasons, Quebec has favored French language immigration. We ask people here to integrate to the majority and learn French if they come to Quebec, which is a majority French-speaking region. And, of course, if the immigrants learn French quickly or if they know French already, which is the case with most of the North African countries, mainly Algeria, Tunisia, and Morocco, well, it's good for us on a linguistic perspective. Yet, in a religious sense, these people, many of them, not the majority of them, but many of them, come with their religion, their practices, and we often see, much more often than it was the case before, in the streets of Montreal, women wearing a veil or a hijab. Most of them would wear the what we call le foulard islamique, just a little piece of cloth on the head. And that annoys people, and especially given the fact that people at one time in its history was very religious, dominated by the Catholic Church, and that most people are very happy that we got rid of this domination, that we're now a secular country, that we don't mix religious with politics anymore. And we see these people coming with strong convictions that religion should be mixed with politics, and that's the case in most Muslim countries, as you know. So that brings about some malaise in the population. I think this malaise is exaggerated. And a good indicator of this is that the further away people are from the place where it occurs, mainly in the metropolis in Montreal, the more they are scared of it. You see, it's a little bit like in the U.S. The further away you are from New York and Washington, the more you're afraid of terrorists. At least that's what the statistics tell us.
That is an interesting and insightful thought, and we're going to have to take a break, so we'll come back in just a minute. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number 1-800-399-356. We'd especially love to hear from those listeners who are on the other side of the border or near the border and living in Quebec. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Tom Porter, your host each evening for Maine Things Considered, a program we know that many of you depend on each evening to bring you the news of our state. And we're not in danger of running out of news and topics, events and issues to report on. We can do that year after year with, and thanks to, listener contributions. Our spring membership campaign is coming up, and the folks here have made it clear that you prefer as few interruptions into our evening news as possible. So we're planning another one-day campaign, Super Thursday, on April 3rd. Taking care of business, public radio style, efficiently and collaboratively. Then Friday, back to the preferred business of learning about our state, nation and world, interruption free. Thanks.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a federal agency has ruled that Northwestern University football players are employees and can join a union. What the decision could mean for other student athletes and major sports programs at colleges and universities.
Join us for the Diane Rehm Show coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon here on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the upcoming election in Quebec. On the line, in our Bangor studio, Tony Brinkley, professor of English and an associate at the Franco-American Center at the University of Maine. And joining us from a studio in Quebec, Louis Baltazar, professor emeritus in the Department of Political Science at the University of Laval and also author of several books. We invite you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can email us at talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Going to the phones now, and Jay in North Yarmouth. Hey, Jay, go ahead.
I just wanted to know if we could learn anything about the candidate's position on reversing the flow of the pipeline to South Portland, and does it make any difference from a Mainer's point of view on these candidates? What is their perspective?
And, Louis, we're talking about the oil sands.
Yeah, this is an important issue in the campaign. The Parti Québécois, somewhat amazingly, because this was a party that had a very strong ecological wing, but they have decided to accept to drill in the Anticosti Island, which is an island northeast, northwest of Quebec, quite far in the Gulf of the St. Lawrence, a beautiful island that is very little populated. So they have decided to allow some drilling in the hope there could be some petroleum there. And the reason for it, they say we keep importing our oil and, as a matter of fact, from Portland. And we should think of if ever we have oil here, even though we should consume as little as possible as petroleum, we will consume it for a long time, so better do it with our own resources. There is another issue, the changing of the reversal of the line that is going to Ontario to get the petroleum from Alberta. This is also very controversial. Most ecologists oppose it, but the Parti Québécois has accepted to proceed with it and receive the Alberta oil through this pipeline, and consequently less import from the Middle East via Portland.
And what about the Liberal Party, the same stance?
Liberal Party, I guess, would do the same. The only party that strongly opposes it is a very minority party, but getting more and more popularity, about 10% of the population. It's called Québec Solidaire. It's a left-wing party, and they oppose all these petroleum projects very strongly.
All right. Well, before we go to the next caller, Tony, do you have anything to add on the pipeline issue?
Not on the pipeline issue. I would like to comment briefly on the charter issue, though.
Sure.
It seems to me that our experience in Maine has been, I'm thinking of the city of Lewiston particularly, that when people know more and more about who they are and where they come from, differences are negotiated in a way that doesn't happen if people don't know each other well. Because I think the interplay between the Franco-American community in Lewiston and the Somali community has enabled there to be a healing and to move beyond stereotypes. Therefore, I wonder what the effect is of having people conceal their religious beliefs or conceal who they are. And I was very interested in Louis's point that the further away you are from Montreal, the more you are afraid of the issue.
All right. Well, Jay, thanks for your call. Going to Eben in Portland. Hi, Eben. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is a bit of a follow-up from the previous caller's question. And more specifically, and more generally, at the specific level, I'm wondering...
Eben, can I ask you, do you have your radio on? We're getting some feedback.
No, I don't have my radio
okay.
on.
Okay. Go ahead. A little bit. Go ahead.
I'm wondering how any of these parties feel about the Energy East pipeline, which is an extension of the Line 9 from Montreal to refineries, Irving refineries in St. John, and more generally, how any of these parties feel in their relations with Harper's very anti-environmental Tory government, which was recently lambasted in an op-ed by Jacques Lilly in the New York Times.
All right, Louis, is there any difference specifically with this one pipeline than the other, the Portland-Montreal?
Yeah, about the pipeline in New Brunswick, I couldn't talk about it. As a matter of fact, it hasn't been an issue in the campaign so far. As for Harper, I found the paper in the New York Times this morning very interesting, very correct, in my opinion, criticism of Harper policies. And these policies are very unpopular in Quebec. And as a matter of fact, this is a situation that helps the separatist movement. We never had a government in Ottawa, at least for quite a long time, that was so antagonistic to Quebec, at least so different from Quebec in perspective. Mm. Most people of Quebec do not get along with the Harper government. The Quebec is very badly represented in the cabinet, less than it has been for years and years. And so there is, even though separation is not in the cards right now, there are too many other issues, yet, practically speaking, Quebecers feel isolated, especially with the Harper government, from the rest of Canada, more than they've ever have been.
I'll bring in another environmental issue. We haven't had a call on this, but I know a lot of people are really concerned about the Great North Forest. What is the stance of the current Quebec government, and is that at all an election issue? The boreal forest that stretches over, of course, parts of Quebec and other parts of Canada as well.
Yes. There is a concern there also, and the Harper government doesn't seem to care at all.
All right. Tony, I was wondering if you have anything to add about just the environmental and energy issues in general. I know that our governor Governor Page has looked to Quebec for hydropower. Is that an issue that you're following up at UMaine?
I don't know that we're following up at UMaine since I'm not in those departments. It's certainly something we've been following up and looking at. From the point of view of our interests in relations between Franco-Americans and people in Quebec. And clearly we think it's in the interest of Maine to have very close ties with Quebec, including very close economic ties. And therefore, we think working together to connect the energy grid, working together to work with hydropower in Quebec is a good idea. We think that Maine in general has been too much centered towards being at the far end of New England and not enough part of its region. And all initiatives in state government that work towards seeing Maine as part of a region that includes Quebec and the Maritimes is, I think, very important and also to our interests.
We invite you to join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can send us an email at talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling, or you can post to our Facebook page. Louis Baltazar, what has been the role of young people during this campaign and this election cycle? Are they swinging one way or another in Quebec?
They have been less present than they were in the last election. If you remember, because it made some international news, in the spring of 2012, there was a big uproar here in the province about the fact that the government of Quebec was increasing the fees, education fees, especially at the university level. And students protested in the streets, and they got a strong support from the population. We called it the Maple Spring, to make a connection with the Arab Spring that everybody was talking about. And it was very much an issue in the campaign. The young people were dead set against the Liberal Party because it accused this party of neglecting their concerns about education, and especially the accessibility to the university. As you may know, here in Quebec, the university access to the university is almost free. Fees are very small, something like $2,000 a year to go to the university. And it's something that most people want to maintain. So we had big discussions about that, and the PQ didn't go very far. It did not accept, it did not do what the Liberal Party was about to do, but it just said that it would index education fees. That seemed to satisfy more or less the youth. So far, they don't feel included in this campaign. The youth, very significantly, in my opinion, are not touched by this charter of secularism and about the scares about the way the immigrant people dress. So they don't feel included because there is little talk about education, probably because all candidates feel they can't do much to change the picture, because our universities are in bad shape. They don't have enough money, so they need money. The government cannot tax more and give them more money, and increasing the fees is something that's not popular here. So we're in a crutch right now, a very difficult position in what concerns education, and so most parties don't talk about it very much. So young people don't feel very much included in this campaign.
Going to Roger in Friendship. Hi, Roger. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. At the beginning of the program, Tony in Bangor mentioned that there were two major issues in this election. One was independence or separation, and the other one was language. And I'm wondering what are the new issues involving language that are coming up in this election?
If I may, the new issue is the position of Liberal Party leader Mr. Couillard. In a debate last Thursday, he claimed that almost everybody in Quebec should be bilingual. Most people agree with this statement. It's an ideal. But most people also claim that there should be a right for people who are still not bilingual to have a job, to work in a factory, for instance. And Mr. Couillard gave the example of a factory worker who should know English, because there could be some visitors, some abroad, who would want to talk to the employers, and these employers should be fluent in English because of that. This had a terribly bad reaction, and the PQ, of course, jumped on it and said, you see, Mr. Couillard doesn't believe in protecting the French language. He doesn't believe the French language is threatened in Quebec, and that should reinforce the legislation in this sense. And this week, the PQ is certainly going to try to raise this issue again, claiming that they are the only party to correctly protect the French language.
Tony, would you like to jump in?
Only to second that. It was apparently a mistake for the Liberal Party to bring this up. I don't think it was intended to have this effect. It was a gaffe, and as we know in politics, when you make a gaffe, then everyone goes after it with the sound bites. I think it's interesting from a perspective from Maine to note that people in Quebec still feel, in many cases, that the French language is threatened, and the importance of the language to identity of Quebec. This is something we engage when we're working between Maine and Quebec, because of Franco-Americans, about 30% of Franco-Americans speak French fluently. That means 70% don't. And the interplay between French and English has a different pattern here. When we work with Quebec, it's very clear that one of Quebec's primary interests is to foster French in Maine, which we, of course, think is important too.
All right. Well, we're going to take another quick break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Stevens Memorial Hospital, committed to providing quality care with integrity, compassion, accountability, respect, and excellence to patients in Western Maine.
Climate One is a conversation about America's energy, economy, and environment. To understand any of them, you have to understand them all. I'm Greg Dalton. How does the melting snowpack in the mountains and clear-cutting forests affect our health in the cities? And what are we doing about it? On the next Climate One.
That's coming up in just a few minutes at 1 o'clock here on MPBN Radio.
Hi, this is Nora Rahm of NPR News. Other public radio stations envy MPBN Radio's audience. Other stations have to have membership campaigns that take more than a week. MPBN's listeners get it done in just one day. All the necessary financial support in one day. Super Thursday is the one day MPBN's listeners work together to do what has to be done. Then it's back to the programs everyone counts on. This Thursday, please acknowledge your appreciation for MPBN's programs and for one-day pledge drives. Call and do your part. Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, next week's election in Quebec. Joining us from a studio in Quebec, Louis Balthazar, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Political Science at the University Laval. And in our Bangor studio, Tony Brinkley, Professor of English and Associate at the Franco-American Center at the University of Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Going to Pierre in Portland. Hi, Pierre. Go ahead.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
My question is more directed, I guess, to Professor Balthazar, because I'm wondering if there's some polling that shows a greater demographic split than, say, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when my cousins were very much for independence. I know he touched upon it a little bit. What I know, seem to know from my own great nieces and nephews in Metro Montreal is that they seem to be much more interested in, say, North American integration, Anglo culture, web, say, world culture that way. They even name their children English names and not French, and it's a certain sort of a vogue, I guess. So I'm wondering if generally the younger you get, or even mid-young, say, late 20s, if there's that much of a desire for independence. And the other one is there still a regional breakdown? I remember back in the day, my cousins that lived in Bas-Saint-Laurent, say, Appalaches, they tended to be more against independence, whereas my other cousins up in Lac-Saint-Jean tended to be more for independence. And I wonder if there's still that regional divide. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, of course, the younger people are interested in so many other issues, the environment, communication with the rest of the world. They travel more than ever, and they are less concentrated on this issue of independence. Yet, I would say that there's still a good 30-35% of younger people, people under 30, favoring independence. And the PQ party has a lot of young candidates, so that you cannot say that there is less support among the young than among the old. The support for independence is quite well distributed among all ages. As for regions, it's true that in the Appalachian region, in the Beauce, regions closer to Maine, that might be a reason. There's much less support for independence than in the Lac-Saint-Jean, as you mentioned. Yet, the bigger support for independence comes from what we call la couronne, the crown against Montreal, the suburb area. We call it the 450 because it's the exchange telephone exchange number of this region, south and north of Montreal. which is very French-speaking, majority concentrated. And there you get almost 50% support for the cause of independence. So that remains an important issue. The polls show 35 to 40%. It's by far not enough to bring it about, and everybody knows it, and that's why we don't want a referendum. Yet, at the same time, you cannot neglect it. 35-40% is an important figure, and it's still in the picture because of that.
All right. Thanks for your call, Pierre. Going to Len in Scarborough. Hi, Len. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I guess I have just a comment. The conversations about the French language being spoken in Quebec and Montreal. And what I observe when I'm there is that it's not French that's being spoken on the street. It's Quebecois. So, you know, if there's a comment, I can take it on the radio.
Yes, but you should... note that Quebecois, and I'm one who deplore the quality of language of young people these days and even in the media, yet you cannot talk about another language. It's a strong accent, as you have many accents in the English language, so it's quite different from the standard French, so much that somebody coming from France or Belgium will have a hard time to understand it. The same, it makes it difficult for me when I go south in the U.S. To understand the southern accent. So it's mainly an accent. The French language is still taught in all of our schools with all the international connotations of the language. But there is a sort of relâchement, I would say in French, loosening of the effort to speak correct language. People tend to mix, as you said before, so many English words with their vocabulary. For instance, they translate the American tune in French. They say tune, and they say a show. They say having fun. So the conversation is mixed with English words, even for people who don't speak English.
And Tony, this is a bit of an aside, but you said earlier in the program that 30% of Franco-Americans in Maine speak French at home. Has that number gone down dramatically in the last generation?
Somewhat. It's an older generation. But I don't think that the number has gone down as dramatically as some people imagine. Hmm. We get calls sometimes from reporters from France or from Quebec asking us to talk about the death of Franco-American culture and also the death of French. And we try to point out that they're not dead. they are surviving well. And we also think that the cultural aspect is probably more important than the language aspect. And we particularly feel, and I think this is something that we struggle with a bit, both with our friends in Paris and also with friends in Quebec, that French is the language as people speak it. It's very important, I think, that it's liberating for us, I believe, that many forms of French are spoken in Quebec, and increasingly one's recognizing that many forms of French are spoken in France. The new position, for instance, of the French government is that everyone's French from country to country, North American French, Maine French, Lewiston French, St. John Valley French, is equally French. So we try to... We don't see French as something that needs to be ruled by a certain normative set of rules any more than English does.
I fully agree with this. I wanted to say something else, but I forgot.
That's okay. We can go to a caller. We'll go to Sue in Bangor. Hi, Sue. Go ahead.
Hi there. Actually, I know Tony. Hi, Tony.
Oh, hi, Sue. I now know Sue, yes.
I've been in Maine for over 25 years now, but I did grow up in Montreal. And I recall a time in the 70s, prior to the first Parti Québécois government, when I was a teenager, when it seemed like there was, in retrospect, an opportunity for Quebec to really model what it was to have a bilingual and bicultural society for the rest of North America, really. And, for example, I remember that the radio station that I listened to, that we all listened to back then, was French and English, but it wasn't like there were French and English shows. It was just between songs or when the DJs were talking, they might speak English, they might speak French. And when the language laws first started, that was one of the things that went. You know, you either had to be English or French. You had to identify very strongly with one or the other. As an English Montrealer, I regret the loss of my French. I miss it. I've been here for 25 years, and my French is not what it once was, and I love to hear it. But I also kind of yearn for that time when all of that seemed so possible, that kind of level of cooperation seemed so possible.
And Louis, the tenor of this election makes it seem like we're not moving in the direction Sue would like Quebec to be moving in.
If I may, I would disagree with the statement.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I think the linguistic legislation, on the contrary, made Quebec more bilingual than it's ever been. You
yes.
see, when there was no legislation, the balance was so much in favor of the English language, then most of us French-speaking people were losing our language. What happened with the linguistic legislation, the balance was redressed. And I will point out the fact that this did not exist in the early 70s, but now 90% of young English-speaking Montrealers, especially those who want to stay in Quebec, speak French. And the proportion of people who do speak English in the French-speaking community has increased so much that St. Lawrence Boulevard, the main street, which used to be in Montreal a dividing line, you know, the English were in the West and you'd speak English in the West, you'd speak French in the East. Well, St. Lawrence Boulevard has become a meeting point now where young people come, English or French speaking, or immigrants for that matter, come together and go at bars, and it's a street that has changed tremendously and has become very lively. So I would say that even though there is a legislation that makes French the official language, and that was needed, practically speaking, Montreal is a very bilingual city, certainly the most bilingual city in Canada. The two languages are spoken in a regular basis much more than in any other city in Canada. Again,
could I comment?
Sure.
Yeah.
No, go ahead, Louis, finish.
Yeah,
and then
okay. Something else I wanted to point out that I've forgotten earlier. In the United States, I think what has helped very much the Franco-Americans is a phenomenon that came about in the early 70s called the ethnic revival. As you know more than I do, before the 1970s in the U.S., the law was that everybody should assimilate in the melting pot as quickly as possible, and it was badly seen to call a particular ethnic origin. By the 70s, it becomes something popular and something valuable. And I've seen many French Franco-Americans who could not speak French and started to learn it and became proud of their origins and wanted to emphasize it and make it clear. So there's been a sort of coming out in the Franco-American community, if I may say. If I'm right or wrong, tell me, Tony.
Well, I think you're right. Just a couple of comments. One is, I think we make a mistake if we don't recognize the amount of wounds people feel for the languages in the languages they have. And when languages like French tend to be suppressed in various ways, it's not surprising that it takes a while for the wounds to heal and for people who speak English to feel a little unsettled by the fact that those wounds are healing. People who in English, too, you know, as an English professor, I know this, that there are a lot of wounds in people's language, whatever their language is, because of their experience of using it. So I think we have to be sensitive to that, and I think Quebec has gone a long way towards a healing process in that. In Maine, yes, there is more of an emphasis on speaking French. What I usually need to point out when I deal with the Quebec government or the French government is that for us, language will follow culture rather than culture following language. And you are Franco-American in all kinds of ways and proud of being a Franco-American, whether you speak French or not. That French comes along as one of as an aspect of the culture, but it isn't the defining feature of the culture, at least in Maine. But I would want to emphasize that people get very wounded. There are any number of stories I could tell you about that. But for instance, we also had laws against speaking French in Maine that were imposed in public schools rather brutally at times.
Well, you know what? That's going to be our last. I'd love to hear the stories, but we're out of time. Tony Brinkley and Louis Baltazar, thank you so much for being here. Tony Brinkley, professor of English and an associate at the Franco-American Center at UMaine. Louis Baltazar, professor emeritus in the Department of Political Science at the University of Laval and author of several books. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Nikki Shields ran the board with help from John Keimel. In our Bangor studio, we had help from Nick Godfrey and Dave Bartlett. We also had additional help from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our podcast by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. Tomorrow on the program, just in time for April Fool's Day, what does it take to be funny? We'll ask two comedians. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.